Welcome to Dispatches, a shorter podcast from the old front line and me, military historian Paul Reed. We've just had our first podcast supporters meeting on the battlefields at Ypres in Flanders, and I wanted to tell you about that weekend and share with you some of the stories from a weekend at Ypres. I've just returned from the first ever podcast supporters weekend at Ypres. The first time I've purposefully met up on the battlefields of the Great War with some of you who listen to the old front line. It was a great weekend in Flanders with people who felt like friends I'd never met, and almost exactly 4 years on from when the first podcast was broadcast. It felt to me that weekend that the podcast has now come a very long way since those early moments which I switched it on to record about Poziers. But at the same time, I kind of felt that also this weekend it kind of proved that in many ways we're only just starting. And we've kind of talked about that in the recent episode about 4 years on the old front line. On one level, the podcast is just there for you to listen to, for you to enjoy in your own individual ways, in your own places. And we've often spoken about all the different places that many of you listen to this podcast. But on another level, I do feel we have forged a kind of First World War, Great War community here of like-minded people, people passionate about the subject, an impassioned too with the landscape of the Great War and how important that is and will always be. And as I've said before, I think that that is really important, because going back to those early years when I visited the kind of battlefields that we've seen this weekend, the battlefields were not a subject which the general public was impassioned with. And at one point we were up on the Bellawada Ridge this weekend, near to where there'd been mine craters from the Great War close to Railway Wood, and those have been filled in, and there was no protest for that because the Great War didn't really have a voice. And that is the importance, I think, of these kind of communities. They give the subject, they give the memories, and the men and women who fought and fell, it gives them a voice when their voices have gone silent. So these communities, and ours is not the only one, have a vital, have an important role to play in taking the whole subject forward as well. So getting together this weekend, the first time that the majority of us have met each other, didn't seem strange at all. It seemed the most logical and right thing to do, to meet up on that Great War landscape and take the podcast and everything that we do here to another different level. So what do we do over the course of this weekend in Ypres? What I don't want to do is kind of rub it in, because there was 27 listeners, supporters of the podcast who were there. John Ace Fisher, who's helped me a lot with the podcast, he was there too. Neil Russell, who works with me as a battlefield guide and is also a supporter, popped in. So it's a fairly small number considering that the hundreds of you who do support the podcast one way or another. And we've almost got a kind of battalion's worth of people, if I'm honest, when we add all of the different supporters together. And when we add the thousands who listen every week, we're getting up towards a brigade size. So I'd have to have a pretty big general staff to be able to manage that many people arriving on the battlefields in one go. So this was really a kind of dip in the ocean, a test to see if there was interest in this kind of thing and how we might replicate that for a wider audience as we go forward over the next phase of what we do with this podcast. And as I say, I don't want to kind of rub it in that we were there and you were not. I wanted to tell you about it and tell you about the kind of things that we did, and also share some of the weekend with you. And the kind of people who join this, bearing in mind that I'd never met them except in the virtual world of social media or Zoom and things like that, I kind of feel as if they're very typical, I would hope, of the kind of people that listen to this podcast. They represent quite a broad spectrum, people coming to this subject from all kinds of different backgrounds. And also, it was very much an international group of people that got together in Eep this weekend, which again reflects what the podcast as a whole is about and those who listen to it. So two people flew in from the United States, one from Canada, one from Sweden. We had five members of the group who were from Belgium. Someone flew in from Scotland and also from Dublin. And then there was a broad spectrum from within the UK. And when I look at my kind of weekly statistics of the podcast, this is a pretty good representative of those of you who listen. And it was great for me to kind of bring those statistics alive by meeting real people in a real place, the subject of so many podcasts, and discussing what it is we do and their interests, and them, of course, also sharing some of their knowledge of the subject itself. And what we did is we met up at Hoog, a little hamlet on the Menin Road between Ypres and Menin, right in the heart of the Flanders battlefields of the Great War. And we did a battlefield walk going up onto the Bellawarda Ridge, looking at the war underground, some of the attacks there in 1915, railway wood, and then walking down to see it from a different perspective, from the other side of No Man's Land. So we'd started really on the German positions, and we walked round to the British, and then down the hill to the Menin Road and Burr Crossroads, where we visited the cemetery there, and then up the slopes of the Menin Road Ridge towards and back to Hoog and Hoog Crater Cemetery. And then we broke for some lunch, and we also went into the museum at Hoog and to the reconstructed trenches that they have there, which are not open to the general public but are open to groups. And as we were a group, we went in to have a look at those and talk about trench warfare and different aspects of the experience of that. And then we finished off in the afternoon with a look at the first flamethrower attack against British troops in 1915, or was it? We kind of talked about that. And then, thanks to Sven, one of the Belgian members of the group, we got to have a tour of the Wipers Times, the Kazematten Brewery in Ypres, which is located in the building where the Wipers Times trench newspaper was published during the Great War. And we had a fantastic reception there, where we were shown the process of how they brew the beer, what inspired them to link it to the famous story of the Wipers Times, how they physically linked it by flavouring the beer in a certain way connected to the way that the newspaper was designed. And we had a great taste of the beer too, which proved very popular and gave us an opportunity to sit down together in that vaulted building, one of the few original structures of Ypres left. I think it dated to something like 1680 originally, and was used during the Great War for all those different kind of purposes, with the ramparts above us. A really kind of apt place to get together like that and talk about different aspects of the First World War. And there were lots of questions about the podcast. So that's in a kind of big sweep what we did. And then the next morning we met up again over at Ypres Reservoir Cemetery, and we looked at some of the stories of the dead in there, casualty evacuation, and looked at the role of the town major in Ypres. And then we walked into Ypres, St George's and St Martin's, and kind of rounded it off there, because there was a big cycle race going on in Ypres this weekend, and there was a lot of people in the main square. So that's where we kind of said our goodbyes to each other. So an amazing weekend with an amazing group of people. Not a one-off, the start of things to come. And as time goes forward, I hope all of you listening to this, if you want to, will have an opportunity to join us there, right on the old front line. Now, one of the aspects of this, and pretty much every time I would hope in the future that we would have any kind of gathering like that, is not to sit in a sterile room and just discuss Great War history, but it is to get out on that landscape, and particularly to walk that landscape. And perhaps for one or two of the people in the group, it was their first time properly walking the battlefields. We didn't walk a great distance. You don't really need to on these battlefields to get a sense of it. And a connection, I think it is that connection to the landscape, the walking the ground gives you. And it was a bright spring day, cold and crisp. As we got up onto the Bellawada Ridge, I think many of you will be delighted to know that I could hear chiff-chaffs singing in the trees of the woods around Bellawada Farm. And just walking that little bit of ground, I think, began to bring home to people, and I would recommend this to all of you listening, to get out on the battlefields and walk them. It gives you the perspective of ground that you can't get from paper research in archives and memoirs and unit histories and official histories. It gives you the perspective of the ground. We walked at one stage probably only a few hundred metres from one point nearer to Hoog to another point closer to the crest of the Bellawada Ridge, and the whole view that we had changed, and the different perspectives that we got from the German positions towards Ypres, and how the spires were less visible there but more visible here, and the general kind of vista that the Germans had from a ridge that we were on that was probably not more than 40 metres above sea level. And it brings home the importance of any kind of high ground. I mean, 40 metre ridges are not ridges in Wales or Scotland or Canada. They're kind of slight inclines, but in Flanders, flat Flanders, they're really important. And the whole subject of the importance of territory in those First World War battlefields is something that we discussed a lot, and of course is something that we've discussed a lot on these podcasts, because it's vital. I mean, the whole war in Flanders really was a battle for the possession and repossession of so-called high ground. Until you really walk it and you see how that ground influences what soldiers could see on the ground more than 100 years ago, and how that was then reflected in the way they fought and how the battles turned out when attacks were made and defences were put in place, none of that really is understandable until you get out on that ground and look at it. And what we did with the Bellawada position, which is famous for one of the big actions there, a forgotten battle of the Great War, when the men of the 3rd Infantry Division attacked the German positions on the 16th of June 1915. It's covered in two excellent recent books on Bellawada, which are still in print and you'll find in the usual places. But to get out on the ground and see it from the German view, looking into Ypres and then walking round past Railway Wood, and then looking at it from the assembly trench positions and from the British front line positions, and then down on the Menin Road from where some of the other units attacked up the slopes towards a position known as Y Wood, it suddenly kind of makes hope, makes sense to people, and takes the words that they've read on a page and lifts them and pushes them into the sunlight in a way that you just can't get just by reading about it. So this, to me, is the value of walking the ground, and that was very much at the heart of what we did on this first Old Frontline meetup, and what I hope we will do very much in the future when we will repeat these. And as I say, I wanted to give you all a flavour of what we did that weekend, but I also, rather than just tell some stories that were just unique to that first platoon of Old Frontline supporters who were there at Ypres the weekend, I wanted to share some of the stories that we discussed with you, the wider audience. And what we did when we went up onto the Bellawada Ridge, it's an area that's wooded on the very crest of the ridge near to the old Bellawada farm. And for many years, it was not a very accessible part of the battlefields. The farm was an active farm, the woods were private, and you couldn't go in there. You could see through the undergrowth that there were overgrown mine craters, and the ground was all uneven and the odd trace of a trench here and there, but it was not possible to go in there. You weren't welcome. It was a working farm. I perfectly understand why farmers don't want people going in there under those circumstances, but it was frustrating for those of us passionate about the Great War. That all changed in the last couple of decades when a lot of this woodland around Epe has been made public, basically by the acquisition of it. Bellawada Farm changed hands, it's now a camping ground, and the woods have public access and there are pathways through them. And some very, very good apps that tie into this, free apps that are made by Flanders Tourism to tell you about the landscape and show you where the mine craters are, and then enable you to compare it with air photos now and air photos then. And of course, it's also in an area where during the centenary, a whole system of trees were planted to mark the Flanders front line. So when you walk this landscape, you come up against trees with a metal frame round, which have got red symbols around them indicating you're on a German trench, and then you can look across the field and see another one of these frames around a tree with a blue surround on it indicating that that is a British trench. And this really helps you to understand the landscape that you're looking at. But when you get up into the woods, the mine warfare woods, the mine woods as the locals call it now, that's where the craters are. And there's a lot of craters in there and a lot of different stories. And we looked at a few of them, but one that we initially looked at was a crater called Hornby Crater, which was named after Brigadier General Hornby of the 116th Infantry Brigade of the 39th Division. Now that brigade contained the 11th, 12th and 13th Battalions of the Royal Sussex Regiment, the 1st, 2nd and 3rd South Downs. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you'll know that they are battalions that are of particular interest to me, having been born and grown up in Sussex and researched those three battalions over many years and interviewed veterans of them who served, the last veterans of those battalions, in fact. So it's a story, an aspect of the Great War that has kind of been part of my journey across that landscape over many years. And I've woven in and out of different aspects of the landscape through the stories of these South Downs men. And Hornby Crater is connected to them because this was a mine, a German mine, that was blown on the 3rd of February 1917 underneath their forward positions. Now, it's not a very big crater. It's probably only perhaps 1,000 pounds of ammonal, a fairly small charge in the grander scheme of things when you look at some of the big mines from Messines in 1917, for example. But it was enough of a charge to create this mine crater and along the way kill six members of the 12th Battalion, the Royal Sussex Regiment, the 2nd South Downs, wounding seven others, and six men were missing who were subsequently accepted as having been killed in action because the mine had destroyed their positions and literally they had been blown to atoms by the explosion of that charge, or their bodies buried in the earth in and around the crater. So aside from being a bit of preserved battlefield when we go up to these places and a fascinating area to explore, we have to be mindful that these craters are also war graves, graves of men of both sides who died there during that static warfare period of the Great War, from just after the end of the Second Battle of Ypres in the summer of 1915 through to just before the Third Battle of Ypres in the summer of 1917. And this period, 3rd of February 1917, when this mine went off, is kind of typical of that. One of the men who was killed there was 2nd Lieutenant Richard Turner. He was a vicar's son from the West Country, and he was only 20 years old when he died. He'd served in the 3rd Reserve Battalion of the Royal Sussex, which was a common route for officers to the front line, trained with that Home Service Battalion, and then be posted overseas. And he'd been at the front for a little while. He was educated at Westminster School, and the school roll of honour states that he was a writer in the making. He was an aspiring author and wanted to write later in his life, but the Great War cut that life short, as is the case with so many young men in the history of the Great War when we study it and we discover these stories of what-ifs, of unlived promise, a promise of greatness that was never realised. And I've been to Turner's grave before and researched this, some of the other men who were killed in the same explosion. But it was good to kind of relay this story and also tie it into some of the other aspects of what the South Downs were doing up there. In fact, that crest of the Bellewarde Ridge is a place where many battalions of the Royal Sussex Regiment fought and came under attack from German mines. The 9th Battalion, the Royal Sussex Regiment, were up there on the 14th of February 1916 when a mine was blown under their positions, and Lieutenant Eric McNair was awarded the Victoria Cross for his bravery in that action. But one of the things I like with the landscape and the way that you can kind of build up what we often talk about as the layers of the Great War is that this was not just a mine crater, not just part of the German mining story of this area and the mine warfare history of this part of the Bellewarde Ridge. That's one layer to it, the war underground. There's a connection to an actual unit that was defending this position that got hit and men were killed and wounded. And the ones that were missing, their names are on the Menin Gate. And the ones that were killed, their bodies were recovered, brought back into the next bit of trench, either what was left of the front line or back into the support trench. And they were then taken back behind the lines for burial. And it's interesting, they took them a long way. They took them to Vlamertinge, and that's where I'd been to before to see Turner's grave and the other lads. They're in a row there in the cemeteries. You come into Vlamertinge Cemetery in the shadow of the great church there. They're over to the left in the far plot. But as part of this weekend as well, once we'd finished, myself and John Ace Fisher, on our way out, we pulled into Vlamertinge and we went to see Turner's grave and the other lads as a bit of a nod, having told their story on the battlefield. And again, this is kind of how the landscape is so rewarding. It's kind of your history toolkit, because you've got a position that is still visible, a mine crater amongst it, the remnants of the trenches that were once there, and you can delve into the history of that to get the whole history of how those craters came about and then the men who were there, and then connect it to real people who were killed and wounded there, and in the case of the dead, go and see their names on a memorial or go and stand at their graves. And I think that is all part of the kind of reward and fascination and connection that we get by walking and researching and discovering those battlefields. Many others would, of course, taken that journey before and visited Hornby Crater and researched Turner and the other lads who was there. But it's kind of part, I think, of so much of what we can get from this landscape of the Great War. Later on in the walk, we walked down to the Menin Road and went across to Burr Crossroads Cemetery, which has a small original plot, and then graves were moved in after the war. And it gave us a chance to talk about the history of cemeteries, the silent cities. But it led on to a discussion about spiritualism in the Great War at the grave of an officer there, Raymond Lodge. Raymond Lodge was the son of Sir Oliver Lodge, and he served with the South Lancashire Regiment in the frontline positions along the Menin Road and in front of Hoog in September of 1915. And he wrote home to his parents that, "We are going into the frontline trenches this evening at 5 p.m. for an ordinary tour of duty." But it wasn't ordinary at all. None of these tours of duty in the front line in places like Hoog were ever ordinary. And one officer later said that the area where they fought was just a mass of ruins and broken trenches. And on 14th of September 1915, the company that he was in was given orders to pull back, and Raymond and another officer were at the end of that movement of troops that withdrew from the area when a shell pitched over and they were both struck by fragments from the explosion. The other officer, Ventress, was killed instantly. Raymond Lodge was wounded in the back and he died of his wounds just a little while later. He was buried initially on the right, as one officer wrote to his parents, on the right of the Menin Road, just past where the Zonnebeek railway line cuts, with a wooden cross marking the head of his grave and a small one at the foot of it. And then after the war, he was moved into one of the plots here at Burr Crossroads Cemetery. on his grave today is the following inscription that Sir Oliver Lodge placed there, which kind of gives us an insight into how this connects us to the subject of spiritualism. And that inscription reads, "Raymond, who has helped many to know that death is not the end." Now, Sir Oliver Lodge became one of the greatest advocates of spiritualism, and he published a book called Raymond, named after his son, in 1916, which is essentially him describing the discussions that he had with his son after his son had died. There was a big movement of spiritualism during the Great War, with casualties on this unprecedented level. People often could not accept that someone was dead, and they literally clutched at every straw, every means, every possible purpose to stay somehow connected to someone who had fallen. And with missing soldiers, that great desire to know what had happened to someone, that was all part of this as well, where people sought answers. And there were genuine people like Sir Oliver Lodge who believed in spiritualism, the power of it. He looked at it from a scientific point of view because he'd been involved in research on electromagnetic radiation. And that work convinced Sir Oliver Lodge that some kind of ether existed in the world, and that ether existed everywhere, and it filled the entire universe. And he then came to believe that the spirit world existed within the ether. Now, I'm kind of not preaching this to you. This is describing what he believed. And he earnestly did believe this, and many others did as well, that somehow through this ether, through whatever method, in any way they described it, you could somehow speak to the dead. That was one legitimate, genuine kind of level of this. On top of that, with spiritualism, you had a lot of chances, and you had people that tried to exploit this for financial gain. So there were many people who came to grieving families and mothers and fathers and widows, possibly even children, and convince them that they could talk to their loved one, connect them once more, but there would be a small charge and that money would be involved. And that kind of terrible crime went on both during the Great War and in the post-war world, when people, decades after the conflict, were still seeking answers, again, particularly for missing soldiers. So Sir Oliver Lodge kind of throws up, and the death of his son and that inscription, Raymond, who has helped many to know that death is not the end, throws up kind of all kinds of questions and debates, which I don't have the answers to, perhaps none of us do, but it's certainly a very interesting aspect of the Great War and one that is important to consider. And I think there's perhaps another element to this, another layer to this, if you will, of spiritualism, when we think of our own spiritual connection to the battlefields and the landscape of the First World War when we visit them. And this is something, if you have visited them yourselves and hearing people this weekend talking within the group, people do feel this kind of connection to places, and they often describe it as a spiritual-like connection to the Somme or to Ypres or to many other battlefields besides. And I think that is kind of tapping into this. Whether that means you walk there and you see ghosts is kind of another thing. But I still think that it is something, an element of the Great War, that is important to consider. And it is one that I would hope one day we would return to in an entire episode about spiritualism and look at the different aspects of it. And of course, on a weekend like this, walking the ground, talking about stories of the Great War, inevitably for me, I would reference the many veterans that I had the privilege and the honour to know and interview. And some of the familiar names came up. George Butler, in fact, several people asked me about George, Malcolm Vivian, Harry Coates, and so many, many others. And I remember saying to the group when we were in Ypres Reservoir Cemetery that for me, one of the sadnesses of travelling to the battlefields today, while it gives me so much, there is an element of sadness sometimes. And part of that is that generation of veterans has gone, the veterans have faded away, and the ones that I knew have gone, and that gone are the days when I could go back from the Somme or Flanders or Luz and ring one of them up and ask them a question and talk about things and discover something new from them that then prompted me to go somewhere else the next time. And I was conscious that amongst the group there were several people who had never had a chance to meet any Great War veterans, and that's a great shame as well. As future generations emerge, they'll never have that chance, which is going right back to the very essence, really, of why I started the podcast in the first place. All these stories buzzing around in my head, these piles of paperwork, letters and accounts and diaries that veterans had given to me, and material that they'd sent me in letters in the days when we wrote letters, all of that just kind of sitting in files in a corner, and it needed something doing with it. And that was partly what kind of prompted me to begin the podcast, because it enabled me, it gave me a platform to tell some of those small stories of the Great War and bring the names of men like George Butler out of the darkness and into the light. So this was our first old frontline meetup on the battlefields, and certainly not our last. When the next one will be, I'm not sure right now, but do keep an eye out on Buy Me a Coffee and the Patreon web pages for details of future events. But what all the interaction with the fine people who travelled to Ypres to spend that time together this weekend, what it did for me was to make me think about new ways that we can all take the podcast forward, and new ways that will benefit everyone that listens to it, whether they travel to the battlefields or not. Because I know many of you use this as a conduit to visit those battlefields when you can't, because of distance and time and many other things besides. So one of the things in particular that I liked this weekend was questions. When we were in the Wipers Times, Tanya asked a lot of questions, and thank you for those. They were really interesting. And I really liked those questions because they led us down all kinds of little alleyways. I often said, here we are, we're going round the houses again and we're going to come on round and come back. And questions are really important, and I really value questions from all of you. So let's experiment, let's try something new. And what I'm going to do is set up the means by which you can ping in questions when you listen to an episode. So there'll be a link in the show notes to what's called a Discord server, where you can go on there, and it's like a little chat room, and you can post your question on there. You'll follow the link, it'll take you straight to it, there's a few little registration details, then you put your question in, and then it appears in my listing. If you don't fancy doing that, which is absolutely fine, it's another kind of platform to kind of work with, you can email them in to me instead. So when you send a question in, tell me what episode it relates to, ask the question. I'm not going to answer it via email or via the Discord server. There'll be an extra bonus little episode where I'll compile, once we've got enough questions, compile them all together, and I'll answer them in the podcast for you all to hear that material, because I think one person's questions has got relevance to a much bigger audience. And very often when I'm on coach tours, the people that are sitting in the first few rows often kind of lean over and they ask a specific question. So I would then get on the microphone and say, Mr. Brown behind me has just asked the following question, and I thought you'd all like to hear the answer. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with this new Q&A. So this is not something that's going to replace episodes of the podcast. It's going to be an extra little thing. Ping in some questions, and it can go right back to some of the earliest episodes. If you've been a long time listener and you wished you could have asked a question about an episode going right back to 2020 or whatever, then ping those in as well. And once I've got enough of them, we'll record a little bonus episode with the answers. We'll kind of see how we go. So the way to do that, just to remind you, follow the link in the show notes to the Discord server, post your question there, or send it in through the oldfrontline.co.uk website, where there's a link to the email address for the podcast, and you can send it in that way. So that's a kind of, I hope for all of us, a little positive outcome of this first Old Frontline podcast supporters meet up on the battlefields of Ypres. And for me, the pleasure in making this podcast really has been immense. It's changed, as I've said before, the whole way that I think about and the whole language that I use to speak of the landscape and the history of the Great War. It's helped me bring together so many years of visiting these battlefields, so many strands of history and the past. And it certainly feels like there is so much more of that yet to come. But this weekend in Ypres, it's proved, I hope, that for all of us who are drawn to the landscape of the Great War, the connection and desire to understand more is what anchors us to those pathways and beacons, grounds us in the shadows of that past, and makes us never want to leave that old front line. You've been listening to Dispatches, part of the Old Frontline podcast, with me, military historian Paul Reed. If you've enjoyed this episode, please think about leaving a review on your favourite podcast platform, giving us a rating, and leaving a comment on the podcast website, oldfrontline.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter, and if you want to support the podcast, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/oldfrontline, or buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/oldfrontline. Thanks for listening, and see you again soon.